ॐ सहनाववतु सहनौ भुनक्तु सह वीर्यं करवावहै तेजस्विनावधीतमस्तु मा विद्विषावहै ॐ शान्ति शान्ति शान्तिः नारायणं नमस्कृत्वा नरोत्तमं देवीं सरस्वतीं चैव ततो जयमुदीरयेत्. Om. Welcome back. In our last class, we had begun this new section, very interesting new section. It opened with Yudhishthira's question to Bhishma, who, as you remember, lies dying on the bed of arrows. Yudhishthira asked about ahimsa, recognizing the importance of ahimsa in the tradition. Ahimsa meaning, you know, a comment. Too often, ahimsa is translated as nonviolence. I'd like to suggest that's a very poor translation, because if I hurt you, but not violently, is that acceptable? So, ahimsa is non-harming, not hurting anyone, causing no harm. The translation as non-violence, I believe, came about when Gandhiji adopted it as a political strategy to win India's freedom without civil war. So as a political strategy, you can call ahimsa nonviolence, but we're not talking about politics here, so we can translate ahimsa as non-injury, or how about harmlessness? Quite a nice translation. So Yudhishthira asks about ahimsa, harmlessness, and Bhishma proceeds to describe four ways in which we should not cause harm to others. So we should not cause harm through our actions, kayena. We should not cause harm through our speech, vacha. And we should not cause speech through our minds, manasa. These three are conventional. Not to cause harm through deed, through word, or through thought. But he said four. Four kinds of ahimsa. These three are conventional. The fourth one is not conventional, but Bhishma seizes upon it for the sake of teaching an important point. What is the fourth? He says, bhakshanena, by what you eat. You should not cause harm by your actions, by your words, by your thoughts, or by what you eat. Leading to the current discussion on what we would call vegetarianism. Vegetarianism is not eating animals. And we'll, before we plunge in, recall that the basis for this is the fundamental principle here, which too often is forgotten. The basis for vegetarian diet in Hinduism is not shuddhi, purity. In other religious traditions, it is. In Islam, in Christianity, in Judaism, there are certain dietary restrictions that have to be followed for the sake of maintaining religious purity. In the Hindu tradition, it's not a matter of religious purity. In fact, look at the Hindus consider cows sacred. How could it be? How could it possibly be a matter of religious purity? It is. Vegetarianism in this tradition is 100% an expression of ahimsa. Don't kill living animals, living things, for the sake of for your dinner. So don't, and in fact, it's extended, don't kill living things, full stop. And just to point out the obvious, are plants living things? Absolutely. But then, here's the reasoning goes like this, and we're going to see that reasoning in a few verses. The reasoning goes like this. We can refrain from eating animals, but if we refrain from also eating plants, are we indeed following the principle of ahimsa? The answer is no, because we're causing himsa to this one. So, have we discussed in the last class that the of ahimsa does not mean no or not? The of ahimsa means least. Ahimsa means living in a manner that causes the least harm to living beings. Can we live without eating animals? Yeah. Can we live without eating plants? No. Oh, here's something many people don't think about this. Can we live without wearing animals? What am I referring to? Leather and other animal products. So we can live without wearing animals. We don't have to eat them. We don't have to wear them. There are alternatives. But can we live without wearing plants? I'm wearing plants. You're wearing plants. Cotton is a plant. So we can't live without eating plants. We can't live without wearing them. You get the point. Before we pick up the thread, I had an interesting question that comes. By the way, you're all free to send me questions by email. I like to get the questions. So the question was, today in modern science, in the laboratories, they are inventing artificial meat. Artificial meat, which is genetically, I don't know the details, but let's suppose artificial meat is genetically identical to real meat. I don't know if that's true or not. Let's just imagine that at a cellular level, artificial meat is indistinguishable from real meat. Then the question is it okay to eat artificial meat? Based on our discussion, what would you say? Was an animal killed to create the artificial meat? If the answer is no, then eating artificial meat would be okay. You follow? The issue is ahimsa, not meat. As I've joked with you before, ahimsa is not a diet plan. It's not about what you eat. It's about ahimsa. So, artificial meat, in theory, would be, I don't know if it's commercially available yet, but if it's created without harming animals, then it should be acceptable. By the way, so milk is vegetarian, unfertilized eggs are vegetarian, but are they produced without harming animals? Questionable, right? Sometimes animals are abused in the production of milk and eggs. So that now becomes a dilemma. Oh, what should I eat? By the way, that's our topic exactly. What should I eat? What should I not eat? And I just want to remind you of an important principle we brought up in the last class. And that is, there is no fixed rule. Ahimsa means least harm, not harm. And least means you choose for yourself where you draw the line. No scripture has a right to tell you where to draw the line. No swami or guru has a right to tell you where to draw the line. It's your responsibility to draw the line. Of course, drawing a line in one direction is better and drawing a line in the other direction is not as good, but it's entirely your prerogative. There's no fixed rule, and that's going to come out really, really nicely as we continue our discussion. So, with that introduction, let us pick up the thread where we left off. In praise of vegetarianism, Bhishma says, Sarva Bhuteshu Yo Vidwan, Sarva Bhuteshu Dadatya Bhayadakshinam, Dadatya Bhayadakshinam, Data Bhavati Lo Prananam Natrasam Shayaha, Prananam Natrasam. Yaha Vidwan, a person who is wise, Sarva Bhuteshu, among all people. Actually, Sarva Bhuteshu, we'll take that with the next line. A person, Yo Vidwan, a person who is wise, and that wise person, Dadati, in the second line. That person gives. Gives what? Abhaya Dakshinam. Dakshina, you know, as a gift, a present. And here, the gift or present is abhaya, fearlessness. The one who gives the gift of fearlessness, sarva bhuteshu, unto all living beings, unto all creatures. One who gives the gift of fearlessness to all living things. Giving the gift of fearlessness means not eating animals. That's all it means. So to not eat animals is to give the gift of fearlessness to all living beings. And Yaha Vidwan, that wise person, the Data Bhavati. Saha Data Bhavati. Saha, he, that wise one, Data Bhavati, becomes a giver, Loke, in the world. He becomes a giver, Prananam, of life. The one who refrains from eating animals becomes a giver of life. Very interesting expression. A giver of life. Every mother is a giver of life. Very special role for any mother to give birth, to give life. Well, this isn't a way in which all of us, females and males, can give life by refraining from eating living beings, from refraining from eating animals. Na atra samshayaha. In this regard, na samshayaha, there is no doubt. There is no doubt that by refraining from eating animals, we give the gift of life. I'll mention just in passing that when one is ordained as a sannyasi, there are only two main vows taken. Only two, which means they should be very significant. What are the two vows given, taken by every sannyasi? You go into the Ganga. In fact, I just came back from Rishikesh, and the very place where I was ordained as a sannyasi in 1993. We're all getting old, so already. So in 1993, Pooja Swamiji ordained myself and one other brahmachari into sannyasa, and we stood in the water with our hands over our heads saying these vows, and the vows were two. The main vow is sannyasa. It stands to reason. But there's one more vow in addition to sannyasa. And that second vow is abhaya, fearlessness unto all beings. That's the second vow. And it's considered so important that every sannyasi takes that second vow of not causing harm to any living thing. These are the only two vows. Everything else is optional, except for sannyasa. Well, sannyasa is pretty broad-reaching. So sannyasa and abhaya are the two vows taken by every sannyasi. All right. Oh, I have a note here I forgot about. I meant just, if you allow me, just to backtrack for a moment. I mentioned about eating artificial meat being okay. It is okay. It is okay ethically. It is okay according to the principles of Dharma. I just share with you an interesting anecdote. Long ago, some, I don't know if I was traveling or something, and I don't know if it was a restaurant or wherever, but I had one veggie burger. I thought, let me try. What is a veggie burger? Let me try the veggie burger. I'll mention, and we'll talk about it later, I was raised in this country going to McDonald's and eating real burgers. That was how I was raised. So having eaten real burgers for so many times, so many years, for the first 20 years of my life or so, 25 years, I ate burgers. Now I'm going to try eating a veggie burger, which is vegetarian, made of soy mostly, I think. But very interesting reaction. The veggie burger smelled and tasted like those McDonald's burgers. And because of the psychological association, I couldn't eat it. So it's ethically okay to eat veggie burgers as long as you enjoy it. If you don't enjoy it, you don't have to eat veggie burgers. Anyway, just a quick aside. Let's continue. Prana yathatmano bhishta. Prana yathatmano bhishta bhuta namapite tatha bhuta namapite atmaupam yena gantavyam atmyaupam yena buddhi madbhir mahatma bihi buddhi madbhir mahatma bihi. Very beautiful. Yatha. Just as atmanaha pranaha, just as atmanaha, one's own, pranaha, life force, one's own life force, abhishta, is dear. Just as one's own life force is dear, your own life is dear to yourself. We all want to live. Tata, in the same way, bhutanam, for all beings, for all living things, atma aupyamyena gantavyam, all other beings, gantavyam, are considered by whom? Buddhi madbihi, by the wise, and mahatma bihi, by the saintly. So the wise and the saintly, gantavyam, they consider sarva bhutanam, they consider the prana of all living things, they consider the life of all living things, beautiful word here, atma. Aupamyena. Aupamyena means equivalent to atma. Atma here simply means oneself. The verse is a little, the words are a little obscure, so let me paraphrase. The wise ones and the saintly ones consider the life of every living being to be just as valuable as one's own life. Very beautiful, very nice. A little bit similar to the Christian golden rule. You all know that very well. Do unto others as you would have them do unto you. So if you don't want to have other people eat you, you shouldn't, if you don't want other, I should say, other living beings to eat you, if you don't want to be eaten, you shouldn't eat other living beings. That's the basic principle, the golden rule. So here it uses, fortunately, much more elegant language than I just used. I used some rather awkward language a moment ago. Here it says very beautifully, the wise ones and the saintly ones, consider the value of life of all living beings, the value of any other life is as valuable as one's own life. Atmaupamyena. Does that word sound a little familiar? Maybe we've seen it in the Bhagavad Gita. Maybe we've seen it in this is chapter 6, verse 32. Repeat after me. Atmaupam yena sarvatra. Atmaupam yena samam pashyati yorjuna. Samam pashyati yor sukham va yadiva dukham. Sukham va yadiva sayogi paramo mataha. Sayogi paramo mataha. Same word. Atmaupam yena. So start in the second line. Arjuna, yaha pashyati, yaha, one who pashyati, sees, samam, sees the same, sarvatra, in everywhere. Someone who sees the same everywhere, atma aupam yena, as equivalent to oneself. This also is a little terse. So what Sri Krishna is saying here is, O Arjuna, one who sees in all beings, samam, the same, atma aupam yena, as in oneself, one who sees what? Sukham va yadi va dukham. One who sees the happiness of all living beings as being samam, as being as important as one's own happiness. Let me say that again. Very powerful teaching here. Same teaching as in this verse, but this one in Bhagavad Gita is more familiar because it's Bhagavad Gita. So let me explain it as clearly as I can. Yaha pashyati, the one who sees, sukham va yadi va dukham, the one who sees the happiness or suffering, sarvatra, in all beings, the one who sees the happiness and suffering as being samam, as being the same, atmyaupyamyena, as one's own happiness or suffering. This is a very important point. You see the happiness and suffering of your family members as being as important as your own happiness and suffering. Why not just extend that? Why should that vision, that concern for others, why should it end at the boundary of your family? It's arbitrary, right? So you can extend it from your immediate family to your extended family. And then you can extend it from your extended family to your community, from your community to your state, to your country, to the world. And then extend it to not just human beings, but all living beings. This is Sri Krishna's message to Arjuna, one who looks upon, I'll paraphrase, one who looks upon the happiness and suffering of all beings as important as one's own happiness and suffering, sahyogi. That person is indeed a yogi, paramo mataha, the best of yogis. Sri Krishna says that person is considered the best of yogis. The best of yogis is not one who can maintain shirasasana, standing on their head, for 24 hours. If you can stand on your head for 24 hours, according to Sri Krishna, you are not the best of yogis. Sri Krishna here makes it very clear. The best of yogis is the one who sees the happiness and suffering of all living beings as being as important as the happiness and suffering of oneself. You care for your family members because of this equivalence of their suffering and your suffering. When that gets extended to all living beings, then you become yogi paramaha, the best of yogis. Very beautiful verse. This comes towards the end of chapter 6. Chapter 6 being dhyana yoga, meditation, but it ends Several other subject matters come in, including this particular verse. Very nice. Very beautiful. Okay. So let us leave the Bhagavad Gita behind and come back to our current text. Bhakshayatva. I have to Bhagavad Gita in my ear. I have to get back to this one. Bhakshayatva tu yo mamsam. Bhakshayatva tu yo mamsam. Paschad apinivartate. Paschad apinivartate. Tasya pisumaha. Sumahan dharmo, tasya pisumahan, yah papad vinivartate, yah papad vinivartate. Yaha, in the first line, yaha, one who, bhakshayatva, having eaten mamsam, having eaten meat, having eaten animals, one who, having eaten animals, but then, paschat, later, api, and later, nivartate, that person desists from eating meat. One who at one time eats meat, and at a later time gives up eating meat, tasya, for such a person, actually, third line, yaha, that person, papat vinivartate, vinivartate, having desisted, papat, from the sin of killing living beings, that tasya, for that person, sumahan dharmaha, dharma is sumahan, is great. For that person who at one point in their life, once they ate animals, and then they desist from eating animals, having given up eating meat, they are greatly blessed. They are a following of dharma. I guess that, as I said before, certainly applies to me, growing up eating McDonald's and all of that stuff. Let me just share with you an interesting observation. What led me to stop eating meat, to be honest, was not dharma. I was in my 20s, I was just starting in this path, just starting to practice some yoga and meditation, and I didn't understand what was ahimsa. In fact, I probably didn't know the word ahimsa or how to pronounce it in those days. So what was it then that made me stop eating meat and drinking alcohol, which I did? Very interesting. I was, as I just said, I was starting to practice meditation, and yogasana, pranayama, all of that. And I started to find that if I ate meat or drank alcohol the prior day, it affected my yoga and meditation the following day. I didn't expect that. I never planned to give up eating meat and drinking alcohol, but when I found that it interfered with my meditation and yoga practice, that, I guess, induced me to give up eating meat and drinking alcohol. Now, I'm sharing this anecdote with you to make a point, and that is the basic reason for giving up meat is not what I just said. The basic reason, as we discussed it right at the beginning of the class, is ahimsa. And my reason at that time was not ahimsa, but something more practical. And there are practical aspects. Eating meat, according to medical science, is not always healthy, especially when that meat is burnt on a grill. Then apparently it has these carcinogens and becomes very, very hazardous. So it, and of course, it's not good for your artery. Your doctor will tell you your cholesterol is too high. Stop eating all those fatty foods and meat and all of that. So the point here is there are practical reasons not to eat meat, but that's not what's being taught here. What's being taught here is not practical. What's being taught here is ahimsa. Don't eat animals, because it is adharmic. You're taking the life of other living things. Okay, enough said. So having explained this much, Yudhishthira has another question for Bhishma. Yudhishthira uvacha, Yudhishthira sarvam tatvena dharmagnya, sarvam tatvena yathavariha dharmataha, yathavariha dhar kim va bhakshyam abhakshyam va, kim va bhakshyam abhakshyam va, sarvam etadvaraswame, sarvam etadvara. So Yudhishthira first acknowledges that everything that Bhishma has said is absolutely correct. So Yudhishthira acknowledges saying sarvam. Actually, he addresses Bhishma by calling him dharmajna, the knower of dharma. O Bhishma, O knower of dharma, sarvam, everything that you have said, tatvena, everything that you have correctly said, is yathavat, is according to dharmataha, is according to dharma. Everything iha, here, that you have correctly said is completely consistent with dharma. Dharma being, as we've seen several times, ahimsa paramo dharmaha. Ahimsa is the primary basis for dharma. So based on that, everything Bhishma has taught has been about not causing harm to living beings by eating them for your dinner. But now comes the question. Yudhishthira acknowledges that everything said thus far is absolutely correct, but now the question comes, kim va bhakshyam? But what is it specifically that should be eaten? Abhakshyam va. And what is it that should not be eaten? He wants some details. So far, it's been a very general discussion. You shouldn't eat living things. But then, as we said, plants are living things. Carrots are living things. Broccoli is a living thing. So where do we draw the line? Kim bhakshyam, what is to be eaten? Kim va abhakshyam, what is not to be eaten? Sarvam etat sarvam, all of this, vadasva, please tell me. Please tell me all this, what is to be eaten and what is not to be eaten. And the issue here, let me just introduce this next section, and that is, what is to be eaten can vary depending on circumstances. I've already mentioned that you are the one to draw the line on what you eat and don't eat. No one imposes a rule or commandment upon you. But look at some of the unusual circumstances. You know that there are Tibetan monks living up in the Himalayas at an elevation of 15,000 feet. And up at that elevation, plants don't grow, period. So if you're up at 15,000 feet and you're a Tibetan monk, what will you eat? Yaks. They eat yak meat. They do. Now, you might, but wait a minute, they're monks. They're like sannyasis. Why are they eating yaks? Well, if they don't eat yaks, what will they eat? You see the circumstantial part of this. Dharma, just to back up, dharma has to be interpreted. We've had this discussion before. Other religions give you a list of commandments. Do this, don't do that. Hindu tradition does not give you a list of commandments, but gives you the principle of dharma, ahimsa paramo dharma, and then puts on you the responsibility of interpreting what is dharma in a given situation. This is really an important principle. What is dharma depends on the situation. So for those monks living up in the Himalayas, eating yaks is dharma. If they don't eat yaks, then they die. So dharma is always situational. Of course, I have to share with you this anecdote. Decades ago, I asked Pooja Swamiji, what about those monks in the Himalayas? What about those Tibetan monks up in... They're eating yaks. Is that okay? I asked Pooja Swami Dayananda. His answer was very interesting. He said, why do they have to live there? Maybe they should live someplace else. And that's his typical style. Kind of to challenge conventional wisdom. After all, they chose to live there. They could choose to live in New Jersey. And then they wouldn't have to eat yaks. That was his logic. But there are others who don't have a choice. And that's kind of our discussion now. Others who are in unique circumstances where they may not have a choice, should they eat meat? And let's see Bhishma's response to that question. Bhishma vacha, Bhishma vacha, kshatakshina bhitaptanam, kshatakshina bhitaptanam. Gramya dharma ratashchaye, gramya dharma yatha, adhvana karshitanancha, adhvana karshitanancha, namam sadvidyate param, namam sadvidyate param. So here, Bhishma is going to give some exceptions to the general rule. The general rule is don't eat animals for the sake of minimizing the harm that we cause. But there are certain exceptional circumstances in which eating meat might be the right thing to do. In the first line, he gives three examples. Suppose you are kshata, injured. If you're injured, your body perhaps, by the way, this is not medical advice, but an interpretation of this verse. Suppose you are injured, perhaps your body needs more nourishment to recover. Basic principle is meat has more calories and protein than most vegetable products. It's just a fact. So if you need lots of protein, if you need lots of fat, if you need lots of calories, perhaps you can find it better in meat as opposed to some vegetable product. So kshata, for someone who is injured. Kshina, for somebody who has grown very weak. Or abhitapta, somebody who is afflicted. And the intention here is afflicted by disease. So if you are suffering from some kind of illness, if your body is weakened, if you're emaciated, Bhishma is saying that in these unique situations, not in general, but in these unique situations, in the last line, he says, na mamsat vidyate param, mamsat. Better than eating meat, na vidyate param. There's nothing better. Na param. There is nothing better, mamsat, than eating meat in these narrow, unique circumstances. So for one who is kshata, injured, kshina, weak, emaciated, abhitapta, or afflicted by some kind of illness, in these situations, perhaps eating meat is justified. Why? Let's go back to our principle of ahimsa. If you are so emaciated, perhaps eating meat is the only way to restore your health. In fact, he's going to say exactly that in the next verse, or we'll come to that. But the point is, there could be some unique circumstances that not eating meat causes harm to your own body. I don't know if that's a medical fact or not, but let's imagine that it's true that for a certain person who is either injured or weak or afflicted by some kind of illness, suppose for that person in that unique circumstance, not eating meat will be harmful to their own health, harmful to their own bodies. In that specific circumstance, Bhishma actually says there's nothing better than eating meat. He gives two other examples. He also says, take the third line. Adhvana karshitanam cha. Suppose you are traveling adhvana along a path, along a really, really long path. If we lived in India 2,000 years ago, I had to travel from Delhi to Rishikesh. If I had to walk from Delhi to Rishikesh, imagine. That would make me pretty weak and tired. And in fact, karshita, you become thin. You expend so many calories walking that you become thin, you become emaciated, adhvana, on that long path, on that journey. So in that circumstance also, Bhishma would say, there's nothing better than eating meat. And he's going to justify it, as I said in the next verse. We'll see that in a moment. And then he gives a third situation, a third set of circumstances in which eating meat would be considered dharmic acceptable. And that's the second line. He says, for those who are gramya dharma rataha cha, yea, those who are dharma, what does it say? Gramya dharma rata. Those who are rata here in a sense of engaged. Engaged in gramya dharma. Gramya means village. Gramya dharma, the life of in a village. Gramya dharma, village life, rustic life. And I think by extension, we could say tribal life. In India and other places, there are tribals, aborigines, people living in the same way that they've been living for thousands of years with very little modernization of their lifestyles. So for these tribals, if they have been eating animals for thousands of years, one should not expect them to stop eating animals. It's part of their culture, part of their long-established lifestyle. So in this third case, Bhishma says, for those tribal people living this village lifestyle, very rustic, in fact, ancient lifestyle, for those people too, it would be considered dharmic to eat meat. Or we can turn it around and say it would be adharmic to deprive such people of the opportunity of eating meat. For us to superimpose our Hindu ideals of ahimsa upon those tribals who have been eating animals for thousands of years, to impose our rules upon them would be a mistake. It would be wrong. Now, in the next verse, Bhishma gives the basis. So he's given this exception in this verse to those who are weak, injured, sick, those who are weakened through travel, and those who have in their lifestyle, their tribal lifestyle, they've been eating meat for generations. So now he supports that for those situations, it is absolutely acceptable to eat meat, and then he supports that in the following verse. Sadhyo vardhayati pranan. Sadhyo vardhayati pran. Pushtim agram dadati cha. Pushtim agram dadat. Nabhaksho bhyadika kashchin. Nabhaksho bhyadika kash. Mamsarasti parantapa. Mamsarasti parantapa. O mighty Yudhishthira. Go back to the top. Talking about eating meat, He says, sadyaha, quickly, vardhayati. It causes the increase, it's a causal verb. Eating meat quickly causes the increase, pranan, of your life force, of your energy. So eating meat, he's according. So here Bhishma is giving us medical advice, so to speak. He says, eating meat will quickly increase your energy. How's that? According to Bhishma. And he says, it will vardhayati pranan, it will increase your prana, your life force, and dadati cha, and it will give you pushtim, well-being, nourishment, agriyam. Agriyam means that which comes first is agriyam. So agriyam pushtim means your original state of well-being before you got emaciated walking from Delhi to Rishikesh, before you got sick, before you got weak, before you got injured. So it will restore you to your original state of health. This is according to Dr. Bhishma. This is medical advice. It is. So, and he concludes, nakashchit bhakshah abhyadikaha. Nakashchit, nothing. Bhakshah, nothing that you can eat. Abhyadikaha is better, mamsat, than meat. Nothing you can consume or eat, asti, is better than mamsat, is better than eating meat. So this is, again, this is in these unique circumstances. So in those unique circumstances, there is nothing better than eating meat. But in ordinary circumstances, in fact, he's going to say, in ordinary circumstances, there's nothing worse than eating meat. He's going to come to that point in two more verses. But just before we proceed, just a general observation here. It is extraordinary. The Hindu approach to Dharma is extraordinary in the fact that it avoids fixed commandments. For example, in the Bible, I think we've referred to this briefly in the last class, the Bible says, thou shalt not kill. Okay. Bible says, thou shalt not kill. And it is given as a commandment. A commandment can be interpreted as a moral absolute. A moral absolute means there are no exceptions. Thou shalt not kill under any circumstances whatsoever. That would be the implication. The Bible doesn't say, thou shalt not kill unless this or that or the other thing. It's given as a moral absolute. But then, suppose you are a policeman confronting a terrorist with a bomb who is about to blow up a lot of innocent people. And the only way to stop that terrorist is to shoot him dead. What should the policeman do? The policeman can't consult the Bible and read that thou shalt not kill. So the point I'm making here is the biblical approach to Dharma, which is to give these fixed commandments, moral absolutes, is not a very sophisticated approach to Dharma. It's valid. I mean, thou shalt not kill is a general principle. But my point is it's kind of a simple, how about this? It's an oversimplified approach to Dharma because there are special circumstances in which you have to kill, as in the example I just gave. The Bible doesn't give those details, so we might observe that it's not a terribly sophisticated approach to Dharma. How different is the vision of the ancient rishis with regard to Dharma, in which they recognize that Dharma has to be uniquely interpreted according to the details of the situation. Dharma is situational. And the basic principle then is, in a given situation, Dharma is to do whatever causes the least harm. How simple, how beautiful, and how profound, and how flexible. This is a principle that can be applied in any situation at any time. And the ancient rishis had that perspective of Dharma. I find that very remarkable that they had this vision of Dharma at that time. Okay. Then, where did I just distracted myself. Let me pick up the thread. Oh, yeah. Okay. So Bhishma has just praised meat eating under very specific circumstances, and now he's going to take the other point of view about not eating meat, where he says, Vivarjane tu bahavo, Vivarjane tu bhava, guna kaurava nandana, guna kaurava, ye bhavanti manushyanam, ye bhavanti manu, tanme nigarata shrunu, tanme nigarata shrunu. He says, on the other hand, that tu here means, on the other hand, bahavaha, many, bahavaha gunaha. By the way, my translation here is absolutely incorrect. Gunaha, bahavaha can refer to many people. Gunaha cannot refer to many pious people. There's a rule in Sanskrit, it has to be a compound. Agunaha can refer to impious people. Sugunaha can refer to pious people. Gunaha, following rules of grammar, cannot refer to people at all. It has to be taken very literally. Gunaha means qualities, merit. Bahavaha gunaha, much merit. So my translation is absolutely wrong. Bahavaha gunaha, much merit. Vivarjane, there is much merit. Vivarjana means avoiding. There is much merit in avoiding eating meat. That's the context. Vivarjane, in desisting or in avoiding eating animals, he says, bahavaha gunaha, there is much merit. Kaurava nandana, the one who's loved in a Kuru family, he's addressing Yudhishthira. Oh, Yudhishthira, look at the contrast. He just praised eating meat. He said, there's nothing better than eating meat under those narrow circumstances. Now he says, bahavaha gunaha, on the other hand, there is much merit, vivarjane, in not eating meat. He says, ye bhavanti manushyanam. Ye mean here refers to that merit, religious merit. Guna here means like punya. There is much punya gained and much papa avoided in not eating meat. And he says, so ye gunaha, that merit, bhavanti, that is accrued, manushyanam, for all people, the merit, the religious merit that people gain through not eating meat, tanme nagarataha, that is going to be described by me. Nagarataha, I'm going to describe the merit that one gains through not eating meat. Shrinu, listen now, as Bhishma describes the merit of not eating meat. This next verse is quite to the point. Swamam samparamam sarayo, swamam samparamam sarayo. Vivardayutomichati, Vivardayutomichati, Nastikshudratarastasman, Nastikshudratarastasman, Nanrisham Sataro Naraha, Nanrisham Sabrat. Sorry for my response here, but you know, the word Sanskrit is such a language. Samskritam, the word, has several meanings. One of the meanings is elegant or refined. But here he uses some rather bold language which is not terribly refined. That's why I'm laughing. So in the end of the first line, yaha, one who, second line end, itchati, one who desires, one who wants, vivardhayatum, to strengthen. One who wants to strengthen swamamsam, his own flesh. One who wants to strengthen his own flesh, how? Paramamsaihi, with the flesh of others. How's that for language? One who wants to strengthen or increase one's own flesh. Instead of holding here, I should probably hold here. There's more flesh here, I'm afraid. So one who wants to increase one's own flesh by eating the flesh of others. How's that? And that's quite literal. One who wants to increase their own flesh by eating the flesh of others. What about that? Nasti kshudrataha, kshudrataraha tasmat. Tasmat, compared to that, nasti kshudrataraha, there is nothing more vile or despicable than that. There is nothing more despicable than increasing your own flesh by eating the flesh of others. And one who does so, naraha, that in the last line, the person who does so, who increases his own flesh by eating the flesh of others, he says, na nrisham sataraha, there is no one more cruel than the person who increases his own flesh by eating the flesh of others. Notice the contrast. Two verses ago, Bhishma says there's nothing better than eating meat. In this verse, he says there's nothing worse than eating meat. Is Bhishma being self-contradictory? You get it. Absolutely not being self-contradictory. It's all based on circumstance. Under ordinary circumstances, Bhishma says there's nothing more vile than eating flesh to support your own flesh. But under certain specific circumstances, he says there's nothing better than eating. It's a very, very beautiful approach to this topic of ahimsa. There's a little bit more we'll see in our next class that we'll conclude here for today. Some important announcements. Oh, let me just mention, as many of you know, I just returned from Rishikesh and Hardwar, where I was privileged to inaugurate the Dayananda Anugraha Bhavan. We have constructed an ashram or residence for elderly and ill sannyasis and sannyasinis in our own tradition. They're informally calling it a retirement home. This is sort of what it's like. But it's really specifically meant for those who can't support themselves or those who are ill. So they'll be taken into that home and cared for. And it is beautiful. There are four floors. The construction quality is really quite nice. A lot of marble, everything very nicely done, very elegant, very functional. There are 21 rooms to accommodate people, and it really came out well. And that building was constructed mostly by you, meaning by the donations that you have given to both the Arshabhuta Center and the Dayananda Anugraha Fund. So it's with our support that we've been able to build that. And by the way, if you're not familiar with the project, that blue poster there will give you some more details. And in the future, I'll give you more details also on the project. Anyway, I want to thank all of you who have donated in general to our ashram, and those of you who have donated specifically to build the Dayananda Anugraha Bhavan, I thank you very much. Our efforts are really bearing fruits. It'll take some time for them to finish. Of course, inauguration is planned for such and such a date, and things aren't quite done. It'll take maybe several months for them to complete all the details. But before long, that ashram will be there'll be residents. So I want to thank you once again for your support. Okay. We sent out a newsletter several weeks ago. How many of you have received our newsletter? Okay, so you all have. So all of our new programs are there. I want to call your attention to two programs in particular starting this week. On Tuesday, our Vedanta class resumes, and our text this year is the Mandukya Upanishad, which has this very profound opening of analysis of Om, very beautiful. But then the Mandukya Upanishad happens to be the shortest of all the Upanishads. It's just 12 verses. So on the Mandukya Upanishad is this very important commentary by Shankara's guru's guru. So Shankara's Paramaguru, his name was Gaudapada. Gaudapada wrote a famous and important commentary on the Mandukya Upanishad. We'll be studying the Mandukya Upanishad along with that commentary. So it'll be a wonderful study of Vedanta, and the text is profound and will begin on Tuesday. So please join us on Tuesday evening, starting this Tuesday at 7:30. And then the other new class that's starting this week is on the Katha Upanishad, but specifically on the Shankara's commentary on the Katha Upanishad. Now, this class is kind of a hybrid class. I don't know how to describe it. It's kind of halfway a Vedanta class and halfway a Sanskrit class, which means you really need to know some Sanskrit. If you haven't studied some Sanskrit, it might not be a suitable class for you. But if you have studied some Sanskrit, this class will do two things. One is it'll increase your comprehension of Sanskrit language, and secondly, Shankara's commentaries are brilliant. And we'll be going through we'll be studying the Upanishad, but we'll also be spending a lot of time on Shankara's commentary, which, as I just said, is brilliant. You'll enjoy it a lot. So if you have studied some Sanskrit before, please come and join us on Thursday nights for that class. Let's see. Other schedule items. Tomorrow we have satsang at 6 p.m. We'll have a question-answer period, so please come and join us for satsang tomorrow. And then next Saturday, we're celebrating Saraswati Puja. Navaratri begins tomorrow, and part of the celebration of Navaratri is Saraswati Puja. We'd like to celebrate that here. We'll be celebrating Saturday, so in place of our normal programs, please come and join us at 11 o'clock. We begin with puja, some chanting. I'll have a nice discourse to share with you, after which there'll be arati and prasad. If you're coming, you can bring a dish of food. There's a sign-up sheet over on the counter. Library will be open after class. We'll conclude with our prayers.